dancers in a celestial ballet. The planets circle our sun, held in orbit by its gravitational pull. As recently as the 1920s, the two farthest known planets were Uranus and Neptune. But when astronomers considered the gravitational pull of every known planet, they could not completely explain the motions of Uranus and Neptune. Tiny errors remained. Could there be an undiscovered planet farther out that also pulled on Uranus and Neptune? In Arizona in 1894, an astronomer, Percival Lowell, built an observatory known as the Lowell Observatory. There he searched for the new planet, but he died without finding it. Clyde Tombaugh, shown here, took up Lowell's mission. Tombaugh took photographs of parts of the sky on different days. He used a device that showed first one photo and then the other in rapid succession. The stars didn't move, but a planet would. On February 18, 1930, Tombaugh came up with a pair of photographs in which one dot moved. This first picture shows a small dot to the left of the two center stars. The second photograph, taken 1 week later, shows that the tiny dot has moved to the right of the center stars. It was an exciting discovery. The moving dot was a new planet. Its name, Pluto. Most of the bodies in the solar system are named for characters in Greek and Roman myths. When Pluto was discovered, an English schoolgirl suggested that the new planet was so far from the sun it must get only dim light, so it should be named for Pluto, the god of the underworld. That was accepted. As the farthest known planet, Pluto is nearly 3.7 billion miles, 5.9 billion kilometers from the Sun. Pluto not only travels a longer path, but moves more slowly around the Sun than any other planet. The shaded areas show that since 1930, Neptune in the inner orbit has moved one-third of its way around the Sun, while Pluto has moved less than one-fourth of its way. Pluto takes 248 Earth years to make one circle around the Sun. The planets do not travel about the Sun in circles, but in slightly lopsided orbits called ellipses. A planet in an elliptical orbit is a little closer to the Sun at one end of its orbit than at the other. Pluto's orbit is quite lopsided. Sometimes Pluto is actually a little closer to the Sun than Neptune. Does that mean the two planets might collide? No. Pluto's orbit is also tilted, so it moves under Neptune's orbit. On June 22, 1978, astronomer James W. Christie noticed a bulge on a photograph he had taken of Pluto. This picture may not reveal much to you, but to Christie, it showed that Pluto had a moon. He looked at earlier photos and found the bulge, on the right in this photo, in different places. This showed Christie that Pluto had a satellite moving about it. According to Christie, he named the moon Charon, pronounced Charon, with his wife Char in mind. By a stroke of good luck, the name had another identity. Charon, pronounced Charon, the boatman from Greek mythology, who transported spirits to the underworld, the realm of the god Pluto. Charon is about half as wide as Pluto is. No other known planet has a satellite that close to being as large as itself. This means that Pluto is practically a double planet. Only Earth and its moon, which is about one quarter the width of Earth, come that close to being a double planet. If we could put them on a scale, we would see that Earth is 80 times more massive than its moon. But Pluto is only 8 times more massive than Charon. When astronomers searched for Pluto, they thought it would be fairly large, so it would pull sufficiently at Neptune and Uranus. But Pluto proved to be much smaller than expected. Even though recent research shows that Pluto is made of rock and a thick coating of methane ice, it weighs only about one-fifth as much as our moon. Despite its small size and great distance from Earth, astronomers have managed to make out some details about Pluto. In the 1950s, they found that Pluto's light grew slightly dimmer and then slightly brighter every 6.4 days. They realized this was because Pluto turned on its axis in that time, showing a brighter side and a dimmer side as it turned. When it's summertime on Pluto, the planet's thin layer of frozen methane turns to a gas and creates an atmosphere. Darker material between the ice then becomes visible, and Pluto appears dimmer, as seen on the left. When winter comes, the gases in the atmosphere freeze and brighten Pluto with a fresh coat of methane snow, as seen on the right. When Pluto's orbit brings it nearest to Earth, Charon moves in front of it and then behind it every 6.4 days. Astronomers discovered Charon just in time to study these eclipses. When Charon passes in front of Pluto, as on the left in this model, astronomers called it an inferior eclipse. When the shadow of Pluto falls on Charon, as on the right, it's a superior eclipse. This is what it might look like standing on Charon during one of its eclipses of Pluto, watching the dark shadow of Charon sweep across the frozen surface of Pluto. Pluto and Charon are so close in distance and in size that particles in Pluto's atmosphere extend to Charon. These form a thin methane cloud over the entire Pluto-Charon system. So Pluto-Charon is a double planet enclosed in a single atmosphere. Pluto is so far from the Sun that from Pluto's surface, the Sun would look quite different than it does on Earth. Even when Pluto is at its closest to the Sun, it gets only about 1/900th as much sunlight as Earth gets. No wonder it's so cold. Because Pluto's thin atmosphere does not scatter sunlight the way ours does on Earth, the stars are visible even with the Sun in the sky. So far, rocket probes have been sent to every planet in the solar system except Pluto. One probe, Voyager 2, even passed near Neptune in August of 1989. But Pluto is not in position right now for Voyager to go anywhere near it. What's more, no Pluto probe is in the works at this time. Sooner or later, though, it will happen. It may not happen for several generations, but one day a probe will be sent past Jupiter or Saturn in such a way that the gravity of those planets will curve the probe's path and shoot it outward toward Pluto. Then we can get a close-up look at both Pluto and Charon and study their surfaces in detail. But till then, our best hope for a good look at Pluto-Charon is the Hubble Space Telescope. Thanks to its orbit above Earth's atmosphere, it will give us the clearest, least distorted view we have ever had of the cosmos. Since Pluto and Charon have turned out to be such small bodies, it seems unlikely that their gravitational pull would be enough to have much of an effect on the orbits of Uranus and Neptune. Some astronomers, like Bob Harrington shown here, feel that somewhere out there must be Planet X, a tenth planet, large enough to affect the outermost planets. He believes that clues lay somewhere in volumes of data returned by IRIS, the infrared astronomical satellite. The infrared astronomical satellite, a special telescope sensitive to heat, was used to search the entire sky for objects too cool to glow by their own light, such as a tenth planet. IRIS sent back maps of the sky like this one. The bright band in the center is the Milky Way. Astronomers study this data, as well as the motions of comets and of probes that move in the outer parts of the solar system, to see if they respond to an unknown gravitational pull. So far, they have found nothing. But it took decades after the discovery of Neptune to detect Pluto, and it may take that long to find Planet X. But is Pluto, or even Planet X, our solar system's final frontier? Not really. For out beyond Pluto, there are many smaller bodies. These bodies are distant members of the solar system. Comets are such objects. Astronomers believe a swarm of many billions of frozen comets called the Oort cloud circles the Sun far beyond Pluto. Beyond that frontier of the solar system lie the stars. But who knows what other frontiers of the solar system lie between us and the stars.